Welcome back to Midnight in the Mountains. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing fine today, Laura. And yourself?
I'm pretty good.
Good.
Excited to be here.
I am too. It's been a little while. And, you know, I think we need to give all our listeners, you know, a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year's. And hope that they everybody had a fantastic time. And it's time to get back in the saddle for us.
Yeah, definitely. I'm waiting for it to warm up so I can go hiking. I was like sick all of Christmas break, so I pretty much just did a ton of research. I already have a whole list on my Google Maps in my phone, which I had discovered like a year ago that you could add places and make like lists. And so I have, let's just say, a lot of places that I don't know how many, but it's a lot. Like if I pull up my map and zoom out, there's like dots all over Pennsylvania. There's dots. There's a ton of dots down in Tennessee. Yeah. So I just added to lists because like I needed something to do. So that's pretty much what I did.
I have used that feature before, but I use it for something a little different. So here around in my county, every Christmas, they have a website with the best Christmas displays, the best Christmas light displays. So what and they don't offer like an interactive map on the website. So in Google Maps, what I do is I just put in the address of the places. And that way I can just go from place to place to place to place right in Google Maps. So me and my girlfriend went Christmas Eve and saw some of them. And There are some really crazy looking displays out there. There's one, it's called the Trotter House. It's here in Rutherford County. Just a quick story, that their son died from cancer like 3-4 years ago. And so they do this huge Christmas show because their son loved Christmas so much. And I'm talking about, they probably have a million lights and their house is not that big.
But wow.
They stripe out their whole front yard. They have a vinyl siding. Every piece of vinyl siding has two strips of lights. Their roof is completely covered. Their driveway is covered. I mean, it is the craziest thing. But one of the cooler things is they also have the music show where you can tune into the radio station and they have the lights, some of the lights, not all of them, but some of them are playing to the music. So it makes for a really cool display. You can sit in your car and listen to music and watch the lights play out there. So I don't know how much money they spend. It has to take weeks to put all those lights up because the thing that got me is like how perfect they are. You know, when you hang Christmas lights, like, you know, you get a little droopy here, droopy there. No, theirs are perfect. Like the spacing between every single line is exactly the same the whole way down the house or the whole way across the yard. And I was just like, all I can think of is like some guy with a huge ruler, like, okay, well, this one needs to be like 1 inch. And then he just takes the ruler all the way. And, you know, he's got a pretty decent sized lot. I'm like, I just don't have the patience for that. I want to do it, but no.
That would be me. Like, if I put something up like that, it has to be even. I don't measure stuff, but I can do it by eye.
Yeah.
You know, but whatever. But that's sad. But I mean, good for them for turning it into something positive.
Oh, absolutely.
That's got to be very difficult. I can't imagine.
But yeah, it was pretty fun. Like, I enjoy doing the Christmas stuff like that. Like, me and my girlfriend, I think we're going to make a tradition out of it. Like, you know, maybe try other counties if we can find a website that has, you know, cool displays like that. Because I'm sure that my county is not the only one that does something like that.
Oh, no, I'm sure it's not.
But the stories we have for everybody, they're kind of interesting. I'm going to let Laura kind of explain where she found these stories and some of the background that goes along with some.
Yeah, so recently I discovered this old series of books, and before they were books, they used to be magazines, and I'll explain a little bit about how that came to be. But these books were published in the 1970s, and it's kind of crazy, and I'm very glad that I discovered them, because the one day I was scrolling through Instagram, and there's somebody that I follow that posted these series of books. And I was like, oh my God, I've seen those before. And my brain flashed to my dad's bookshelf of picturing these books and I was like, oh, he has these books. And I was like, I've literally never opened them. I've never known what they are. So I'm thinking to myself, if somebody that I follow posted these, I'm like, there has to be some kind of tie into paranormal or some kind of like folklore or something interesting. So I finally remember months later to go on my dad's bookshelf and pull one of these books off. And I look at it and it's called The Fox Fire Book. and it has all this stuff. Like, just for example, the very first book. I know that there's like 6 books in the series, but I think there might actually be more. And the first book gives a little synopsis of what you can expect, and it says hog dressing, log cabin building, mountain crafts and foods, planting by the signs.
Like an almanac?
Kind of? Probably something like that.
Yeah.
The snake lore, hunting tales, faith healing, moonshining. So that definitely got my interest, seeing the faith healing, and I was like, wow, okay. So I opened this book. Were you going to say something?
I was just going to make a comment about the moonshining.
Go ahead.
I couldn't help myself. I was like, well, you know, we are talking about Appalachia in the 1800s, and I'm sure there was plenty of moonshining going on back then, for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, so I opened this book, and I was just going to go straight to the faith healing part, and I was like, well, no, I'm kind of interested, you know, where those came from. So I read the introduction, and I ended up just continuing reading into the book. And so basically the premises of this was, there was this teacher down in Georgia, and he kind of says to himself, like, you know, I got this, I can handle this job, it's no big deal, I graduated from this college, you know, he thought highly of himself. And then he's realizing when he gets to school, and he's standing up there behind his podium, and there's paper airplanes flying around because the kids are just completely reckless and rowdy, misbehaving. And he's like, okay, he's like, I can't teach these kids anything because they're not going to sit here and read a book and they're not going to listen to me. So he's like, somehow this idea of let's put a magazine out came about. So he gave the kids something to go do, which I really appreciate, because, you know, for me to like sit down and read a book and to learn from that, I can do it, but it's kind of difficult. But if you give me a project to go out and do something that I, you know, I could learn so much better. So this ended up really working for these students and for his teaching. So he sent them all out and was like, go out and interview your grandparents, go out and interview older folk, and get these stories and learn how they used to do things and all this stuff. So these stories are being retold by these Appalachian mountain people. And a lot of these people would have grown up in, I don't know, the mid-1800s to the end of the 1800s. So what I did was I went on Amazon and I looked up, because my dad only has 3 of the books. So I went on Amazon and I looked up the other books and I started reading what the other books entailed. And I saw that the second book has ghost stories in it. And I was like, sold. So I was like, I have to get this book. I have to get a copy of it. So I ended up buying the second and third book. And you can get used books on Amazon, which is great, because you could buy new editions, but I wanted the old books from the 70s because I feel like they're more, you know, it's just nicer to have the actual old book rather than a new edition of it. But anyhow, so that was very long-winded, but that's how I came about this series, which I think is fascinating. So we have ghost stories that are very old ghost stories for you.
And I'll also say, you know, after reading through some of these stories, is that we're going to read them as they were told to the best of our ability. These, like she said, these stories are from Appalachia. The accent is going to be tricky. The stories are not going to be, you know, nice, neat, and concise stories that are people heard from their parents, their grandparents. We came across a few that are interesting, to say the least, even with all those caveats.
So to go off that, what the teacher did was he sent these students, these high school students, out with tape recorders, and they sat down and they tape recorded these older people, and they took that and transcribed it as exactly as they were hearing it. So some of the stories, we both had to read them a couple times to make sense of what they were trying to say. And it almost seems like would you agree that maybe like some parts of the conversation are kind of missing somehow, or just, it just doesn't really make sense sometimes?
Yeah, there was a couple of stories where you're absolutely right. It's almost like they didn't copy the entire conversation, or they didn't transcribe the entire conversation where they took the parts they wanted and maybe just didn't put the rest of it in there. It almost gives it a ring of authenticity, you know, just because, you know, these stories are old. I mean, they're, you know, for us, it would be like our great grandparents' stories or even great great grandparents' stories.
Definitely even farther than that.
Mean, these are old, old ones. So I think that, you know, you just got to kind of take the story as it is and just enjoy it from that perspective.
I mean, and in the book, there's pictures of the people that are interviewed, and they're very old and they're very wrinkly, and you could tell that they worked hard their entire life. So, I mean, they're old, old back in the 60s. So these stories are for sure old. But I could start out. So this chapter is called Boogers, Witches, and Haints. It's funny because I was actually on Instagram last night and I follow this one person. Her name on Instagram is Appalachian Bluebird, and she lives somewhere in the South and she always posts like old history stuff. And it was funny because I was reading this chapter as I like took a break to look at Instagram, and she was like explaining what the word haint meant. And she was saying that like the word haunt kind of with the accent got turned into haint, but so like a lot of these stories will say, oh, that place is hainted. And a haint is basically like a pesky spirit, not something that's good. She explained it that a bad spirit will come to haunt you, but your grandmother will come to visit you. She's not going to haunt you, is basically how she explained it. So it starts out with just a little intro, and it says, probably my earliest memories are the times when the power would go out and we would have to get down the kerosene lamps. My grandmother always used these times to the best advantage by telling ghost stories or booger tales. I don't remember the tales as such, but I can remember the lamp that lighted only her face as she recalled the choicest horrors of her childhood. That the people of these mountains should have a rich supply of haint tales is not at all surprising. They had conquered the land, but only in small areas around their doors. No matter how friendly the woods seemed in daylight, there were noises and mysterious lights there at night, and that were hard to ignore if you were out there all alone. We tape recorded the following stories in attempt to let you share a singular mountain experience, a night of ghost tales by a slowly dying fire. Which, I love all of that. The grandmother sounds badass. I'm just picturing this old lady scaring the shit out of these little kids.
Well, that old woman probably knows a thing or two about scaring kids, to be fair.
Yeah, so that's fun. So I'm going to start out with a really short one, and I feel like it's important because, well, I'll just read it. So this one is by, and they give everybody's name who's telling the story, which is pretty neat. So this one is told by Mary Carpenter, and she says, there's a place over yonder at Jim Branch. They had been people said, here we go. They had been people said they've seen balls of fire as these old-timey washpots roll the road there. I forgot who was told me that they was coming there one night and said they was a big ball of fire. And they said they hit Frank Kelly's field and cut across through the field and wouldn't pass it. So now, there's not much to the story, but the reason I chose it is because with a lot of these, I feel like, so these are, we've already discussed that they're old stories, but we all know that I listen to podcasts nonstop, and a lot of these have tie-ins to things that I've heard that are happening nowadays. So it just gives it all that more credence, I feel like, to these stories. And I personally know, like, my one good friend, I think it was like this past summer, he sent me a picture of literally like a red orange fireball that he saw in his woods. And he had called up his neighbor and said, yo, what are you doing over there? And the neighbor was like, what are you talking about? Had no idea, didn't see anything. And I still have it on my phone. I screenshotted the conversation so that I could retell it correctly, that it looked like a giant basketball, like glowing in the woods. And my friend already thinks that he has Bigfoot activity on his property because he'll go outside at night and sit on his porch, his deck, and he'll hear all these kind of crazy noises. And he knows that it's not a certain animal because, you know, he knows the sounds of the woods. He knows what kind of noises animals make. And he hears these crazy stuff and his dogs will go crazy. And he's sent me videos from his porch before, and there's some weird noises that come across. So just the fact that he has had this for a while now and he's lived there for a couple of years, and then it was this past year he saw this giant glowing fireball, basically, for lack of a better description, and here's this old story of the same thing happening. And my friend's story is not the only one that I've heard that's like that, so there's something to it.
Okay.
So that's why I wanted to read that one.
Very, very interesting.
You want to know what I think? Yeah, yes. You're speechless right now.
I don't know what to say. Like, I mean, I wish that at some point I could hear the recordings from his backyard, like, you know, just to hear the weird noises, just because something like that's fairly interesting. There's weird stuff that happens everywhere in the world, you know, like, I'm interested in all the stuff. Like, I want to see the videos. I want to see the recordings.
I'll send you the screenshots then when we're done. Yeah, so you know what I think?
Yes.
I think that Bigfoot... I can't even... It's so hard to say this to you because you're so much more of a skeptic than I am. But I think that Bigfoot uses these light orbs to travel around. I think that they somehow put themselves in your face.
I'm not even making a face. Like, I wish everybody could see the video. My face is completely neutral, just listening. And she looks at me and she says, go ahead.
Because I feel like you're like, yeah, you're batshit crazy.
I have not said a word yet. Wait, I want to hear the whole story.
You don't
have to say it. I want to hear the whole story.
But anyhow, yeah, no, I think that they use these orbs to travel around, and then they somehow like poof themselves out into their Bigfoot bodies or something. But that's just one of my theories. Anyhow, what do I know?
I think that's an interesting one. So here's the thing that gets the first thing I think of here, right? So let's just say that Bigfoot is using a light orb to teleport around. Let's just assume that's true, right? That tells me that Bigfoot must be smarter than we are. It's using a technology that we do not understand, and it's been using it for forever. A long time. And normally I don't think that, and I mean, you can jump in here anytime, but normally I don't think of Bigfoot as being like the smartest creature in the forest, for lack of a better way of putting it. Like, they're not Einsteins. Everywhere I've ever heard them described is they're just another creature in the forest.
Yeah.
But if you're going to say that they can use a magical light to teleport, then that's not an instinctual thing. That's a technology thing. Right. Or I mean, it could be.
Well, I don't know that it's technology. It's like a woo-woo paranormal deal.
But if that was the case, if it was just a woo-woo paranormal deal, what makes them so special that they have a magical teleporting light and we don't?
Because it's Bigfoot. I don't have an answer for you. Because that's a whole argument in the quote-unquote paranormal field, or the Bigfoot field, if you want to say that. There's a whole camp of what you would call flesh and blooders, which they just strictly think that Bigfoot is a giant ape roaming around in the woods. And then there's other people like me who think that there's a spiritual paranormal aspect to them. Because for one thing, there's so many stories about Bigfoot and all the weird shit that goes along with it. There are alien crafts tied into it. There's light orbs tied into it. There's just like so many things where people, and this has literally happened to me, where like I've been bluff charged by what I think was a Bigfoot. I heard something coming after me in the woods, like storming through the woods, but yet there was nothing there to be seen. So they have some kind of cloaking ability.
So going back to our ghost story. So when I was reading through the ghost story portions of this book, this one kind of popped out in my head. It's probably one of the more interesting ones. And I'm, like I said, I'm going to read it. I'm going to do the best I can with it because, Mr. Jim Edmonds has an accent that's way thicker than mine is by a lot. So let's just jump right into it. There was a man one time, had a lot of money, all silver. Had no greenbacks then. Had about half a bushel of silver sold his place out, you know, and was going to go out west, out of the country. So he was getting everything ready, had his money he got from the place, you know. So he got this feller to come and give him a shave. And as he was getting all fixed up and ready to go, well, the feller got him half shaved and then took the razor and cut his throat and killed him. But the feller couldn't find the money because the guy had buried it. Well, they find this guy dead. They don't know what happened or nothing. Somebody killed him, but they didn't know who did it. When people way back then would start to go from one country to another and they didn't have a place to stay, they would just go on and find an empty house. Some folks came driving by one day looking for a place and asked a feller about it. He said, "I got a place down there. Can't nobody live there. Tell you what I'll do. If you live in that house for 12 months, I'll give it to you. Can't nobody live down there. Don't know whether you can stand it or not. You can move in the house if you want and live there." They just had one child, you know, the little feller. They just laid him up on the bed. The old man, he was out working around getting wood and fixing up, going to stay the night. The woman, she was a fixing supper, and here come a man running in with his head half cut off and a razor in his hand, starting like he was going to the bedroom. The woman was scared to death and said, "Lord have mercy, don't kill my baby." He just stopped right quick and said, "Fine thing you spoke to me. Tell you what I've come for. I want you to do something. You do what I tell you." He told her the man's name that cut his head off. "I was fixing to leave here and he cut my head off to get all my money. Tell you what I want you to do. You go and swear out a warrant for that man and get him to come to the court for a trial. You don't need no witnesses. Don't need no witnesses. You just have him come to court. You'll have a witness. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. You'll have some money. You come and follow me." He went just a little ways to where there was a big rock was laying there. And he said to move that rock, but the woman said that she couldn't. But he said, "Yes, you can." So she reached down and that rock was turned over real easy. And there was all this money down where he dug the hole. He said, "Now that you get all that, that's yours. You do what I tell you. You have a trial and have him come to court. And when you're ready to have a witness, you'll have a witness." She went ahead and got that man arrested, got the man and told him what he was guilty of. People didn't understand at all. The judge asked him what he was charged with. "Murder," he replied. The judge then asked him if he was guilty or not guilty. About that time, here come that feller walking in the courtroom with the razor in his hand with half his face shaved and his head half cut off. When the man saw that, he just tumbled over dead. And that's the story. So as you can kind of see, you could tell that when they wrote this story in the book, they literally just took it like word for word the way he said that story. When I read it, I could hear myself talking to somebody that's from Appalachia that's probably 80 years old. But it is kind of an interesting story. And you can tell it is an older one because they say no greenback. And I don't know when the word greenbacks was in style, but it wasn't any time in the, you know, around this time at all.
Yeah, that story, it almost sounds to me like she's the only one that would listen to him. Because he's like, "Oh, it's a good thing you talked to me," or "good thing whatever he said to her," because it seems like everybody else just ran away scared and she's the only one that would actually listen to him.
Like I said, it's a very interesting story to me just because of the way it's told.
Yeah, I think so.
But as a ghost story, I give it 8 out of 10. I like it.
So I noticed a common thread reading these stories that there's a lot of headless ghosts wearing white t-shirts. There was at least 3 mentions of it. So that was kind of gruesome.
It's just another one of those people in white things that is a reoccurring theme.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done stories from what, zero, you know, beginning of recorded history all the way up through that of people in white. It's a very interesting phenomenon.
Yeah. So to just touch on, I won't read the whole story because there's a lot of text to it, but it's just a brief story that this woman in the beginning of this chapter, she was a teenager and she was hanging out with all of her friends. And they were walking somewhere, and she mentions that there's this little girl in a white dress following her right on her heels. And then all of a sudden, she looks down, and I guess the little girl was, I think it said she was like sprawled out on the ground, like flat. And all of a sudden, she disappeared. And then she realized it was a ghost. And she said she wasn't scared because she had all of her friends with her, but I'm like, bullshit.
Exactly. Like,
what do you mean? I don't know. But I mean, yeah. Also, but there's been times too, you would think that you'd be scared, but you're actually not scared when it comes to some weird things happening. So it could have been something like that. But true. Anyhow, I just wanted to bring that up because that's a little ghost girl in white. And those are our favorite stories. So
yep, always a favorite.
The next one I have is from a guy named Lawton Brooks. And his story says, Bob Meeks was his name, and he was a working somewhere in Tennessee over there. He come through by Benton while they didn't have the road then. He had to come across that mountain. Now, I don't know whether it was Frog Mountain, whether it was that name or not, but anyway, there was 22 mile there that there wasn't no houses on it and steep and twisty, my lord. And it was late in the night. His wife had a called him. Some of his kids got sick and he hadn't come in. And he was coming up along that mountain. And he said, come around a curve. And he seen this thing. Said it was the biggest man he ever saw. The man stepped out of the water dish by the side of the road and said he just leaned over a little. And as he come by, he just stepped on the running board, reached down, opened the door, got in and sat down, and looked him over. It was old Model T, and the way it was going, it didn't make much more time than a man walking. And he said he looked at the thing's hands, and that he couldn't figure out. Says his fingers, one of them, was as long as two of his, and as they was put together, and as big again around. He said he had awful big arms, and on top of his hands was just as hairy, plumb on down toward his fingers. His fingers was the longest he'd seen on anybody. Must have been 10 inches long. He said he spoke to him, and he never did speak back. He said he didn't know whether he was going to do anything to him or not. He said he knowed he was big enough. They wasn't nothing he could have done about it. They wouldn't no need a getting scared because that man could have reached plumb around him one-handed. Big tall man, all hairy. He said he had a beard way down and a hairy face and said he was a kind of nasty looking old man. Said he looked as old as the hills. Said he never got a sound out of him and he could hear him a getting his breath. And he said he rode at least 3 miles with him and wondered if this thing was going plumb to Ducktown with him and he was going around another curve and that thing, man, whatever it was, he just stepped out. He said he looked back and it was just standing there in the road. Said he was the ungodliest man he ever did see all the days of his life. He said people might not believe him, but he said it was the truth. Now I believe it, because I don't believe Bob ever tell a lie. He was a man, never got excited about nothing. And after that man got out, Bob said he just kept on a driving. So that's one ghost story that old Lawton Brooks told us. And then there's more to his chapter.
This one here, I just get the feeling in the back of my head that like it's almost like a description of a Sasquatch.
Yep. 100%. That's hairy, why I chose it.
Long finger. I don't know about the long fingers. Is that like a defining characteristic?
Yeah.
Okay. I've never heard of the long finger thing, so.
That they're just big. Like, they have a big, big hand.
Yeah, right. That makes sense. That makes sense. Because I'd read that one, too. I'd almost used that one. And when I was reading, I was like, well, that's kind of weird, but yeah, I only read it once. That kind of dates that particular story, though, because wasn't the Model T, like, the early 1900s?
I think so. Isn't it one of the first vehicles?
Yeah, it'd been one of the first vehicles. But, you know, the interesting thing about that, too, is when did they have Model Ts in Appalachia? Like, I can't imagine that, you know, the first year they came out.
1908.
Even the first 10 years of the Model T, you think you wouldn't find one in Appalachia?
No, probably not.
So, I mean, you would have to kind of date this story to, say, I don't know, 1920s? 1930s, maybe?
Yeah, early 1900s.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that, you know, in Appalachia, you know, Sasquatch is a thing, to be fair.
Sasquatch is a thing everywhere. But yeah, I've never heard of all the stories I've heard, and I've heard a lot of them about Bigfoot. I've never heard one where somebody picked him up and
he got in the car.
Yeah. The reason, too, why I also chose this was because, I mean, it's very odd, first of all. And second of all, I also chose it because what stuck out to me is it appeared very human. And I listen to Sasquatch Chronicles, and I can't tell you the number of stories on there where there's hunters that have seen something in the woods, Bigfoot, and they say, like, they're feeling threatened and terrified by this creature, but they're like, I couldn't pull the trigger because its face was too human. So this story really made me think of that.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. I don't think I've ever heard, which, yeah, it's just Sasquatch getting into a car, even like an open Model T, if they're that big, you know, if they're 10 foot tall. But I think Model Ts did have a roof on them, that they were open cars, if I'm not mistaken.
I think they could be both. I think there was...
Man, if you were 15 feet tall, your knees would be up in your face so bad.
Yeah.
Practically speaking. All right, so I have one from Lawton Brooks as well. This one, he was going possum hunting. So I'll read this one. This one's kind of... It's not really scary or anything. It's just kind of...
It's weird.
Yeah, it's a little interesting, so...
But I'll tell you my thoughts on it when you're done.
Okay, good. All right, so it starts off, and me, which the me in this sentence is Lawton Brooks, and me and Walter Coleman and George went possum. Now, that's the only thing I ever did that I never found out what it was. Now, I didn't find out what that was now, and I'll be fair with you. We left, and it sounded like someone taking a fit, just like somebody a crying, hurting, something awful bad. It had just commenced when we walked to where a dog treed a possum out on the ridge right on the Hiawassee River, maybe. That's a weird word. We're just going to say Hiawassee River. And we just went out there to get a possum, you know. And when we went out there, by gosh, we just walked around the end of this old big log, and we just got a little bit past it, and something commenced. Lawton? What in the world is that? And I say, I don't know, but it sounded like the most pitiful noise I've ever heard. That somebody or something's hurting. So we took our old lantern then and walked around the log, all the way around it. We come back to the big old stump where the tree had been sawed off and looked at the stump. It wasn't holler. Looked in the end of the log. It wasn't holler. Well, I went up to the side of the log with my lantern and shined the light along it. Couldn't see no hole in the log on either side of it. It still sounded like somebody crying and moaning under the log. And we started a little way from the log to where it sounded like it was coming from now. And it sounded like it was right back at the log. And then we start off out to the log again. And it would be coming from a little way away from the log. And then it commenced there, right there at the log. And we never did find out what it was. We left there. I mean, we left George and Walter and me. We started off that mountain away from the moaning with nary a possum into a field, Old Man Smith's field. And we ran right into a wire fence that we didn't know was there. Way we went flying, when we hit the fence, it scared the daylights out of us. That was the only thing I ever heard. I never did find out what it was. Why, I wasn't scared so bad, but I wasn't going to stay them and the boys run off and leave me. They wouldn't stay with me, and I sure wasn't going to stay up there listening to that thing by myself. So we didn't take the time to get any possum. So, to paraphrase the story, they went out possum hunting out on the mountain or out on the ridge. They came across a tree that they heard moaning or like something was hurt underneath it. They inspected the tree and the stump from where the tree was sawed off of, which they never found anything. They walked away from the tree. It was still moaning at them or crying at them. And then they got scared and ran down the mountain and hit a fence row. The reason I picked this story was, number one, you know, you hear things in the woods all the time. You know, the woods can be a pretty scary place. I would assume they're going possum hunting at night because possums are nocturnal, or I think they're called diurnal, but nocturnal is good enough. And that, you know, if they were using lanterns and things like that, if you're going in some of the old Appalachian woods at nighttime with only a lantern that's just going to show like 10 feet around you, that would be pretty terrifying, to be fair.
That sounds really scary, and I kind of love it. I want to go do it.
We could have went out to that that field behind Brushy Mountain. That would have been a good one.
Well, I would have done it. Don't ask me twice.
It was dark, cold,
scary. I wanted to go up there. That would have been sick.
That would have been sick, but anyways.
Well, no. There was hogs, so I don't think I would have. But, so, as far as paranormal, it's a very common thing to hear something like a baby crying or something in distress or a woman screaming, something to lure you into the woods. So this is very much one of those stories. Bigfoot has been known to make baby crying noises for whatever reason. If they're trying to lure you out in the woods, I'm not sure. And I don't know, even specifically, people say it's Bigfoot, but maybe it's not. But there's also other things, like other kind of entities, things that don't have your best interest in mind, making these noises to lure you out into the woods, and then God knows what they want to do with you.
Sure.
But this sounds like one of those stories.
What's the animal that sounds a lot like a human baby when it cries? Is that a fox? Or is it a coyote? Or it's one of the, I think it's a fox. Because my buddy, he lives kind of out in the country, and he has foxes out on his property, and he's heard them sometimes in the morning where they sound like a baby crying, almost. Like that's the younger ones, not a full-grown fox, but like will sound like babies crying. And so that'd be another, you know, explanation to what it was. But yeah, I mean, I used to do a lot of hunting. You know, that's the weird thing is I've never really come across anything out in the woods that I went, what the hell is that? Like,
yeah.
But, you know, I don't go out in the woods as much as everybody else does. I'm kind of a city boy, some, you know, nowadays. But still, you know, I kind of wish I would have. Like, it would probably give me, like, what the hell was that? Like, my idea, though, I'd probably go exploring, and then I wouldn't be here today because I wanted to figure out what it was.
Well, that's what we're going to the LBO for, my friend.
True. Big true. Big true.
Yeah.
All right. Next story. What you got for us?
So I have a Mrs. R. L. Elliott. And she says, well, my mother, you see, she was raised in a house that was haunted. She said every rainy night, there was always noises to be heard. And her daddy would, this is fucked up. This is like, I'm like, are you kidding me right now? So she says, and her daddy would send him out, you know, because a lot of nights would be like hogs under the floor. And he'd send him out with lanterns. Are you fucking kidding me? What? If you know they're hogs, then why do you need to go find out what they are? Nevertheless, send your child
with outside. A lantern. A 20-pound lantern.
20-pound lantern. But what are you doing? Can I punch you, please, sir? Because that's ridiculous. Anyhow.
Times were a little different back then, to be fair.
Yeah, I know that, but this is just borderline stupidity.
I tend to agree there.
Yeah, I was reading this and I was like, what do you mean?
Did it draw straws? Like, they send the youngest one out? Like, all right, you go check on the hogs this time.
So ridiculous. So anyhow, he'd send them out with lanterns and they couldn't see nothing, but they could hear it. It was just like hogs. And when you'd get around there, why, you wouldn't see nothing. They'd just hear this noise. And then maybe a night or two later, it'd go like horses, you know? Just different noises all the time. And her daddy was just kept a running all the time. They'd go just like a big bunch of hogs under the house, rooting. You know how they'll do. I don't believe you can see a spirit. I think you can just hear them. And where anybody is killed, there's always a noise to be heard. That's really true. Now, I've experienced a lot myself, and I know that this is true. I've been around a lot of these places, you know, where people has been killed. So she goes into another story, which I'll read, because I think it's pretty good. But there's a lot of, to me, this is just very much like a big, and I'm not saying it's Bigfoot, because I don't know what was going on, because there's other kinds of Appalachian folklore and all kinds of weird shit that goes on. But it's just like, how many stories have you heard? But it's just especially like, it's literally happened to me where you hear a Bigfoot, something in the woods, but you don't see anything. So I just think it, like, and I'm not saying it was Bigfoot under the floorboards, but I mean, I don't know, but I just think it's very interesting that she even knows that it was something, because she's saying, I don't think you can see spirits, but I think you can just hear them. So she knew it wasn't something physical. They knew it was something paranormal that was unexplained. So she goes on to tell another story, and she says, I've lived up there at that hotel where Mr. Ramey was killed. One night I was up there, out alone, just me and my son, and we heard a bunch of people coming down the highway crying. Moon was shining just as bright as day, and I stood out and listened, kept listening. and they kept coming closer and closer and come up right to the house. Seemed like this sound just went around the house, but I never did see nobody. But it went like a whole bunch of people. So I just went in the house. I got scared and went in the house, you know, and locked the door. And she goes on to say, and my uncle, he said he lived in a house over yonder. And after his mother died one night, him and his brother was in the bed and something woke him up, a choking him. And he said he tried ever which way to get his brother awake and couldn't get him awake. And he lit the lamp. And he said when he lit the lamp, it looked like a big animal that had black hair. And it was a big old animal. And he said it made another dive at his throat, you know, to choke him again. He said he never did get his brother awake, but he followed this thing in the front room, and he said that this thing went up just like a ball of fire through the top of the house. See? They travel. I forgot that I even read that, but they travel through these balls of fire. Who's crazy now?
I never said anybody was crazy. No.
But, yeah, so it says, she says, you see, that was a spirit. That wasn't nobody. It went up through the top of the house, there in the room where his mother died. There's been a lot of things seen, and I believe in ghosts. Yeah, but so I found hers to be really interesting.
Yeah, that is fairly interesting. It kind of goes again, you know, with the whole traveling thing.
Okay. Okay, good input. Good job.
I took the one thing that was most important. I think really, once again, the more interesting portion, once again, is like hearing these old people tell their stories that from when they were kids, you know, and just how different the world was for them versus us. I think there's a lot of context there that can be appreciated, to be fair.
Oh, yeah. That being said, I feel like everybody should read these books because it's not just ghost stories. It's about how they had to live life and how hard it was. And you had to be tough or you were going to die, period.
Yeah. I haven't read through them all, but the copy that we're reading from tonight, I skimmed through it. And it's a pretty, I mean, if you have any interest at all in like farming and homesteading and anything along those lines, like you should definitely put this on your list.
Or even just history.
History too, yeah. I get behind there. Okay, so I think this will be the last story for the night, I think. And this one's from Mary Carpenter. And Grandpa said one time that he went to go make music for somebody and he broke the banjo string. They said, well, we'll have to quit. We ain't got another banjo string. And one of them said, John, you run over to Ken Muse's. He's got some banjo strings, some extra ones. He said, get on over there. He said, it ain't late. We'll play some more. He said he looked out, but he wasn't afraid. But he didn't like the idea of going for the banjo strings because the gentleman had a big dog that would bite. And he said, it's getting pretty dark, and I'm afraid that dog will get me. Grandpa said, no, I'll make you a board light. There wasn't such a thing as a lantern or a light or a flashlight, so they got him a pine torch and lit it. He said, now, if you'll just hurry along, he said, that you just a big old pine knot, you know, and just keep burning and keeping it going. If you don't stay too long and hurry along, it'll last till you get there and back. And so he did. So he started out with this pine knot and said he nearly got there where something just reared up on him and put his hands up on his shoulders and pushed him backwards and blowed breath in his face. Said he reached like that to push it off, but couldn't feel nothing at all. And said that he plodded on pretty fast till he got over to Ken's house. And he said to him, is your dog loose tonight? Ken said, no, I've got him tied up. He said, I thought you kept him tied up at night. Now you tell me what that was that reared up and pushed me down out there. And he said, he's about as big as your dog. And he said it was a huge thing. And it put his front feet right on my shoulders and shoved me backwards. No, it wasn't my dog, John. Come here and I'll show you. I chained him up tonight. So they went around to the back of the house to the cellar door and the big old dog was tied up there. And said he never knew what that was, but something pushed him backwards and breathed in his face. And said that if he would have had a light, he could have saw something. But since all he had was this pine knot, he didn't see anything at all. So I thought that one was kind of interesting. I was going to get your opinion on what you think it could have been that pushed him down that would be like a dog. But then maybe it wasn't a dog, or maybe like, you know, a big animal or some sorts.
That one, I have no idea. I've never heard of something weird like that happening. It just sounds like a very negative, almost mischievous, but like not with ill intentions kind of spirit or something. The fact that it pushed him down and breathed in his face is really disturbing. I mean, imagine that. You're in the dark and that happens to you. You're like, what?
I'll tell you a quick story. So, and it only kind of goes towards what I'm talking about. So when I was a kid, I was probably 10 years old. We went over to go see some of my parents' friends, and they had a lion in their backyard, like a full-grown 2-year-old lion, full mane, the whole nine yards. But he was tame-ish mostly. So anyways, the guy brought him into the house. And the lion escaped from the leash and did 2 bounds through the house and landed. Both his paws were on both sides of my shoulders. And this 900-pound cat was licking the side of my face. Now, so I tell that story only to say that I could kind of understand like something big pushing you back. And just like I froze. Like I completely froze because you're just so surprised at what's happening. You don't really react. You're just like, of course, yeah. Everybody else freaked out about it. Everybody else completely lost their shit about it. But so that I could see where a kid, if you're going through the woods to, you know, probably somebody, it sounds like somebody he knows house. He's probably been there before.
Obviously. Right.
But if you only had like the smallest little light, which, you know, pine torch don't give off a ton of light, and something just all suddenly pushed you back, you know, it's not like you push him to the ground and breathed on him. And then when you try to like go, you know, reach, you know, push off, whatever, there's nothing there. How weird would that be? You know, he just, okay, well, I got back up and went to go get my banjo strings.
Did he even return with the banjo strings?
It doesn't say that he returned. Oh, okay. It doesn't say that, but I would assume that it probably did.
I don't think I would have. I think I would have went running back to the house.
That's the reason he didn't want to go to the house anyways, was he knew that guy had a big dog.
Right.
Right. And so when I would assume, you know, when he got pushed down, he immediately thought, oh my God, it's this guy's huge dog. And
right.
The guy said, no, it's been chained up all night, you know, yada, yada, yada. So
yeah. And he even took him and showed him.
So yeah, the surprise behind that is surprising.
I don't know. That's a creepy one.
Yeah. Yeah. That one's kind of creepy, but that's why I wanted to ask you, like, if you knew anything. I mean, I can't really think of anything, you know, that I've ever heard from spooky things that would act like that, per se.
No, I've never heard of something like that.
But yeah, that's weird. Another good one. I like it.
Yeah, so I think that wraps up all the stories that we're going to read for this episode. But, I mean, if you're interested, definitely go on Amazon and look up, or maybe even a used bookstore. Go look up. It's called Foxfire 2, just Foxfire and the number 2. And you should be able to find a copy on Amazon, used copy, if you want to read more about it. So, thanks for listening, guys. If you want to follow along on Instagram, you can go to midnight_in_the_mountains.
Yep. If anybody's got any cool stories that they want to share with us, just hit us up in the DMs, and we'd be happy to. We like our listener stories.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Have a good night.